Hey guys, today's guest has taken millions of listeners on journeys through the haunting landscapes of the American South. He's an audio engineer turned storyteller, a man whose name is synonymous with chills and thrills. Meet Brandon Schecksnyder. He's the creative force behind Southern Gothic, from working with country legends like George Strait to exploring shadowy corners of Southern history. He's here to push the boundaries of what we thought we knew about hauntings and haunted stuff and everything historic. So let's get into it. Here we go. Hey, Brandon.
Hey, Michael. How you doing today?
I am doing good. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thank you for having me.
You know what? Let's start this out the right way. I want to know, who do you want to do a shout out to?
I need a shout out to my kids, of course. Absolutely. I love that. Yeah.
There you go. We're going to talk about hauntings and being haunted and ghost stories and stuff today. And I'm excited about this, except for the part where I might get scared and won't be able to sleep tonight.
We'll keep it even then. It's the middle of the day right now, so at least okay. The lights are out, right? The sun's up.
Yes. Yeah. You are known for the Southern Gothic. Like, where'd the name come from and how'd you do it? Tell me about it.
I just thought it was a cool name, to be honest. Southern Gothic, going with that theme, American Gothic. But, you know, in reality, you know, I grew up down in New Orleans, reading a lot of kind of, you know, all that kind of vibe. That's, this genre of Southern Gothic. And, you know, of course, got into like reading William Faulkner and stuff like that, and went down this rabbit hole with all that kind of Gothic literature. So, you know, when I was looking for something to do, and I wanted to make a podcast, and I knew I wanted to make it about some creepy stuff and some dark stuff and have that vibe, that name came very quickly, to be honest. And and ever since I stuck with it. So
now here's the I don't know if it's scary, but interesting part to me. You started out as an audio engineer, and you've gone from that to now doing this whole thing where you've blown up doing ghost stories. Like, how did you make that decision?
Well, you know, I was an audio guy. I was working in recording studios in Nashville for a long time. I was working on records, you know, spending a lot of time in the studio. I mean, you talk about making some of those records, just, you know, you'd spend 3 weeks and practically not go home making a record. And, you know, had that opportunity to work through that recording studio system for years and years and years, spent, you know, almost 15 years as that being kind of my primary, profession. And at some point, you know, with being an engineer, you're a creative entity in there, but you're not really driving creativity at that. You're almost more like, rather than the architect of the house, you're more the contractor following the plans, and it's a craft, and it's something that, you know, you're able to do things like that, but I kind of just wanted to do something else for myself. And so, you know, kind of during downtime of making some of those records, I just decided I would become enamored by like Radiolab and all these podcasts, and thought, hey, this could be a cool creative outlet.
And, absolutely.
And it just kind of started that way, and has gone from there, really. Yeah.
Do you remember the first time that you actually like got online and you just like told a story?
Well, I remember the first few episodes that I made and how many hours I spent trying to get them perfect. And now they are completely hidden away and tucked away on, and no one will ever hear them again. With podcasting and all this stuff, I always think about, there's this old saying here in Nashville that songwriters talk about: the first 100 songs don't count.
Okay.
They just don't. It's practice. And, so I have a few podcasts that are tucked away, hidden. Ain't nobody ever going to hear.
I've got, I would say there's probably like 80 that are like down at the bottom, and I'm thinking like no one's going to scroll that far. So I understand what you're talking about.
Yeah, it's exactly. They're just, let's skip those.
Okay. So I was talking with my producer, and I said, Brandon said that he might do a story for us, and I would love to hear a ghost story, since like you just told me, it is bright outside. I don't have to worry about my wall shaking and the dishes moving. So have you got a favorite that you want to tell us, a short story?
Yeah. You want to hear a story. So, I tell you what, it is. I'll tell you my favorite one, and it's a little less ghost, but it's, you know, still kind of a pretty creepy story. And right now is a good time because unfortunately it's hurricane season, and that's kind of been in the news a bit, right? You know, my favorite story actually comes down from right around where I grew up down there in the New Orleans area. And you know, if you're driving to Baton Rouge from New Orleans, about halfway between the two, as you're driving these long bridges over the swamp. There's this spot in this part of town, or this part of the state, called Manchac Swamp. And the swamp down there, it used to have this city that was there. It was called Frenier. But unfortunately, Frenier was actually destroyed by a hurricane back in 1915. It was completely just wiped off the map by this hurricane, right? And folks say that the reason it was wiped off the map is it was actually the result of a voodoo curse out there in Manchac Swamp. So a little bit about it, though. And folks have talked about this for years, right? So, you know, back in the early 1900s, there was a woman who lived out there in the swamp. This was a small German community of farmers. They were harvesting timber, the cypress trees out in the swamp. They were growing cabbage, things like that. It was called Schlosser at one point in time. So I joke with Scheck Snyder. These are people who looked like me, blonde hair, blue eyed, German ancestry, you know? So they're living out in the swamp, and this woman moved out there, a woman by the name of Julia Brown. She moved out there with her husband, Celestin Brown, and they'd acquired some land because Celestin had actually fought in the U.S. Army during the Civil War. He fought as part of what was called the U.S. Colored Troops. They were formerly enslaved people, and he, you know, went and fought for the Northern cause at that point in time. So he was given a land grant out there in the swamp, had a big, you know, about 40 acres, more than 40 acres of land out in the swamp. And so they're living out on the edge of the swamp for years with all these German immigrants out there. And Julia Brown, she supposedly became a bit of a midwife for the community. They said she practiced voodoo. That was her religion, and whether or not how much of that's true or not, or if she was just doing root work or things like that, we'll probably never know, right? But this was a very isolated community. You could only get to it by boat or train. You couldn't drive there. You couldn't take a cart and a horse or anything. We are out in the middle of the swamp, okay? And so if anybody got sick, they'd go to Julia Brown and she would help them. If someone was pregnant, she was the midwife, right? So she had a very good relationship with this community until she didn't, okay? Because one day after Celestin passed away, as a little bit of time passed, folks said that she started to sour on the other folks in town, and their relationship started going downhill. And what they noticed was she was starting to spend time out in her cabin, out on the edge of the swamp, sitting there on the front porch in a rocking chair, just kind of twiddling with some string and kind of singing this just eerie song. When I die, I'll take the whole town with me. When I die, I'll take the whole town with me, right? Mm-hmm. Well, you know, here's all these folks, like I said, all these German immigrants who are here, they're all Catholic origin, right? And they're out there in the middle of the swamp and all, and they don't really understand what Julia does, but they hear this song and you can imagine they are just scared to death. They don't know what to think of it, right? Well, time passes. And of course, Julia eventually, she's up there in age at this point. She's right around 80 at this point in time. You know, and Julia passes away. I'm not sure why. I don't know if it was old age or anything else, but she passes away. And of course, the community is now faced with this issue because they have heard this song, right? Mm-hmm. And so the day of her funeral comes around 2 days after she passes. They have her in the house, you know, and everybody. And of course, the whole community comes out. This is standing room only at this funeral. And why wouldn't there be, right? Because she might have delivered some of these people. She might have delivered their babies. She might have helped them survive illness, save their families, or they might have just been scared and they wanted to appease her soul, right? So it's standing room only at this funeral, and everyone's there. But little do the folks in Frenier realize that at the same time, they're so isolated, they haven't heard the news that there is a vicious hurricane that is actually making landfall in Louisiana, just right down the road, right down in New Orleans, making landfall somewhere between 2 and 4 o'clock that afternoon. So as they're in this building, crammed in at the funeral, all of the rain starts to pour and all the wind starts to pick up. And all of a sudden, all of the water around them in the swamp, it starts to raise in that storm surge. And the next thing you know, they are just getting pummeled by these rains and all the hurricane coming in, and folks don't know what to do. And they're running off, and they realize how vicious this hurricane actually is as it's coming in. And they're running out of that. Folks all around, folks are trying to make it out to the railroad, getting the train. Maybe the train can take them back to New Orleans. People are trying to get by boat to the next dry land, do everything they can to save themselves. They say some folks even were climbing trees to try and get away from the raising waters, which was absolutely horrific in its own right, because they described later hearing the sounds of some of their friends and family drowning below them. And that's what they experienced. This is an absolutely vicious storm. It was one of the worst ones in recorded times prior to named hurricanes, right?
Wow.
That day, we had over 200 to 400 people died in southeastern Louisiana. And that town of Frenier, where Julia Brown lived, was completely destroyed. And her body washed away that day out into the swamp. So since that time, it makes us wonder now with Julia Brown, right? What really happened? Did Julia Brown curse the town of Frenier? Was she predicting that this storm was about to happen? Was she really practicing voodoo and had this kind of vengeful wrath? Or was she just a regular person who kind of got, you know, a bad rap at the end of the day?
I just have to know.
Yeah.
How much of the Frenier being there is a real place, and how much of it is a fictional place that now is part of the story?
Frenier is absolutely there. It's still there to this day. There's actually a couple buildings there. You can stop on I-55 if you're going up to Baton Rouge. There's an exit. If you're going to Baton Rouge, I-10, there's the I-55 split. It's right on the isthmus between Lake Pontchartrain and Lake Maurepas. And you can take the exit there. There's a Cajun Pride Swamp Tour. You can actually go visit. It's actually on some of the land that Julia Brown actually owned at that point in time. So historically speaking, this is what makes this story so eerie. All of this stuff happened. The only thing I cannot promise you that happened is, did she sing that song or not?
Okay.
That's it.
But, okay. Yeah. So are a lot of the stories that you tell, do they have a true or realistic, or you can look up the stuff backstory, or do they not?
Well, you know, it's a mix of stuff, right? So, you know, some places they do, some places, you know, what you have is, I joke, there's always a little bit of nugget of truth in almost everything, right? Uh-huh. There's always something I'll always start some way. So like, I don't know about you, Michael, but like when I grew up, there was like a creepy house about two blocks away. Mm-hmm. And of course we all made up a story about it, right? Well, you know, that's what I see in some of these old tales, of course. You know, it's a lot of things. There's a kernel of truth. There's a nugget of truth for Julia Brown. You know, she's a real person. She actually was there. And there was a newspaper article a few days after she died talking about her funeral and about how that is exactly when the storm hit. Completely factual in the newspaper. However, that newspaper article didn't mention voodoo at all. It didn't mention a curse at that point in time. Uh-huh. So, you know, so I see that kind of over and over with stories. You know, you get the truth to it, then you kind of get this kind of game of telephone that happened over 100 years of, well, you know, like I'm kind of passing the story down, and then maybe, you know, the grandkids of the people who told the story, who knew it, you know, maybe it changed, maybe it didn't, you know, and some of those things. And that's what's fun to me about doing haunted history. And I could tell you a million lies all day. That have developed over over time.
You know, there's like the stories, like I was a Boy Scout, personally. Mm-hmm. But there's the stories you tell around the campfire, and there's like and I can't remember the proper names of them, but there's the one with the woman that's in white walking down the lady in white.
That's a classic story. Yeah,
it is. And it seems like it pops up like all over the place, and it is a terrifying story when you're just sitting around the campfire, by the way.
I mean, the lady in white, there are Irish and Scottish stories about ladies in white. I mean, there are, that is one of probably The most infamous stereotype. Now, I do tell people, though, here's the thing, you know, so you can find a lady in white, probably. I mean, there's several in every state. You know, I've covered ones in Arkansas, you know, cover ones all over. It's a common trope, if you will. But the problem with some of these stories is that sometimes there's a kernel of truth in them that isn't just that. And like the Julia Brown story, where you go, oh, like, maybe this one isn't just somebody pulling my leg.
Mm-hmm. Which ones, what do you like better? Do you like the ones that are completely fanciful, or do you like the ones that have the grain of truth in them? And it's like, yeah, there could be.
I enjoy the process of kind of teasing it out. I'll tell you another story real quick, a totally false one. Okay. That is a great story that I enjoyed debunking. Okay. I have a story here in Franklin. I live in Franklin, Tennessee. It's just right outside of Nashville here. And for years, ghost tours have been talking about this one building. It's called Clouston Hall. For years and years, I've talked about this gentleman by the name of Edward Clouston built this house. And this is a horrific story, by the way. So just, you know, kids beware, but he built this house here, right in town in Franklin. It's a small Southern town. Of course, he was a Scottish immigrant, came over here. He had so much cash. He decided that this house in town, it wasn't even going to be where his family lived. This was going to be like his after church brunch spot. So he builds this beautiful, you know, just federal style, just beautiful home. But according to local lore, he's going to build this house in time for just one special event. His daughter is going to get married. And he, of course, wants to have everybody come and have like the reception at this beautiful mansion, show it off and everything, right? Well, the day before the wedding, you know, everybody comes in, the church is done up, it's decorated. We're gonna have a big old Southern wedding, right? And all the family, all the dignitaries come in town to watch Edward Clouston's daughter get married. And they all go to bed in this house in town that night in Clouston Hall. And in the middle of the night, Edward and his wife get woken up by just this awful sound. And they walk out of their bedroom onto the balcony and look down to their foyer down there. And they realize that their daughter, the bride-to-be, had hung herself from this balcony there. And so this just horrific, right? And so according to local lore, what folks said for a long time is they said that she was in love with one of the boys down the road, right? And of course, heartbroken that this is what had to happen. But, you know, as time went on, of course, what folks started to realize, you know, with records and all those sorts of things, was that Edward's daughter was 17 and the groom the next day was 48. So you can imagine why this happened, right? Mm-hmm. You know, this was an arranged marriage. And to this day, folks have claimed to see the apparition of this woman in the house. There's some photographs that get passed around town of this stairwell here and what looks like a kind of just, you know, an apparition or like a mist or a fog kind of coming down. Like it is this image of a woman. And people have talked about seeing things there. And when I first heard this story, it's a great story to tell on a ghost tour, and I can really milk it and tease it out if you, you know, really want to do it. You know, and talk about how beautiful she, you can go so many rabbit holes and all. But when I first heard the story, it hit me that it had so many stereotypes from so many different other stories that I had heard from all over the South. Right. The South, for some reason, really enjoys telling stories about dead brides. I don't know why. It's just my fault, but you know, they it's always, because this is supposed to be this wonderful day and it turns tragic. You know, sometimes it's, you know, the groom doesn't make it in time, and then the woman dies of a broken heart, right?
Right.
For some reason, right. we all need women mourning us for eternity here in the South. And you know, and so it had a lot of these typical tropes. And you know, I, as soon as I heard this story, I thought, man, I don't know about that one. And yeah. We went and looked it up, you know, and we went on down to the archives with my friend from Franklin Walking Tours, who, you know, has told this story for generations, not realizing this. And, you know, we get in the archives and can't find anything about it. We start finding census records and realize Edward Clouston didn't even have a daughter when he built the house, you know, no record whatsoever. And we actually even went and talked to the county historian, and the county historian's like, y'all been telling that story? Like that's a bunch of hooey.
That, you know,
and so, you know, it's I enjoy both. You know, I enjoy it's a search. It's a lot of fun. You know, it's a lot of fun kind of learning about it, you know, and there's a reason why those stories get made. And these are little Southern towns. These are little places, any town, not even the South. You know, we like to make up stuff that kind of spook us, you know.
You know, that is like, that brings up a question for me. And that is, one is, why do people like to get scared? Yeah. It doesn't seem like a natural thing. Like, I like to laugh. Uh-huh. But I'm not so sure about getting scared. Why do you think people like yeah. those stories?
You know, honestly, it's a question that I wonder a lot as well. I think it's a lot of fun for some people. It's a safe way to face, you know, death. It's a safe way to face, you know, violence and things that otherwise you don't want to come into contact with, right? Mm-hmm. For you to hear the story of the Clouston Bride, and for you to go there and kind of, you know, it's a safe, you have a safe distance from this by it being a ghost story. And I think maybe that's part of it.
You know what? You just said something I literally had never thought about. And that is that ghost stories are about death, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's trauma, you know, and I think even if you come at it from a perspective of a ghost hunter, if you're someone who believes in spirits as this kind of energy and as things, you know, they talk a lot about, you know, in order to have a ghost yeah. somewhere, you know, you have certain conditions, and one of those conditions is likely going to be trauma, and that's why it's there. So I think it's the same reason why we have such a large true crime kind of interest. A true crime as a genre is as large as it is, you know. Yeah.
It's just, you just literally opened my mind to something brand new. What place have you been that has like the most ghost stories, and they just get around, and like someone sure. who wants to go on a vacation and be scared to death, where should they go?
Oh man. Well, we went in December, went out to Waverly Hills Sanatorium in Louisville, Kentucky. Okay.
That's scary.
And yeah, it's this old abandoned it's a tuberculosis sanatorium, right? And it's abandoned, this giant four-story building. It's just hollowed out and empty. So they had purchased it a few years ago as an abandoned, and probably over a decade ago, and have been doing ghost tours, and they're trying to, keep it renovated, keep it around, right? It's got a bit of a history to it and all. And there's lots of stories in there, lots of different stories about, you know, people have come through there. But we went and visited that in December. We made the mistake of visiting it in December because we went from midnight to 6 a.m. as like a lock-in to this thing. And it was cold. It was like 20 degrees out there. We're bundled up walking through this abandoned sanatorium. And, you know, there's lots of folks out there with all the meters looking for ghosts and things like that. And, you know, there's just all these little different floors. There were different stories about what happened there, and a very famous place. It's supposedly world renowned for what they call shadow people, where, you know, if you walk down the hall and you keep your eyes peeled, you know, where you might see kind of faces and things kind of poking out, sticking out, just kind of shadows. I know. And, you know, we didn't get too freaked out. I was really hoping, you know, I'm not really big into all the ghost hunting equipment. I want to experience it, right? Mm-hmm. I want to have that firsthand experience. I don't want to, you know, necessarily have little meters moving and things. And I didn't really, you know, feel too much, but man, there was one point. We're on the third floor, near where the children's wing was, and my girlfriend grabbed my arm and she's like, "We're leaving this floor right now." So it was a blast. I recommend, if you're into spooky stuff, you know, go on one of those tours where you kind of get to wander around, because they just let you free roam. You know?
Have you ever, like, yourself, like, my brother was telling me the other day, he was in some town. He travels all over the place. He was at the vending machine and he was looking for change and he didn't have any. Turn around, some guy was asking if he needed, like, you know, some change. And then he looks back and the guy's gone. And I'm like, "Yep." And he actually said, "I'm out of there." He left. He got another hotel. Anything like that happened to you where you're like, "That's probably a ghost," or "It's scary enough that I'm just not staying here"?
I wish. It has not happened. I've had some kind of weird kind of events that seem to, like, coincidentally, you know, maybe that's something. I joke, usually if I tell a story well, then there's a better chance of something happening. Mm-hmm. It seems like I have a couple stories that when I tell them, it seems like, you know, the next thing you know, something, it's like something's brought to your life that is a good thing, right? And I don't know if that's, it's part of that's kind of joking about it, but I will say, I mean, any spirits out there listening, look, I mean, nobody's out here more than me. It's a better agent for y'all to come out and kind of telling your stories. I mean, come on, man, I'm waiting.
I'm happier. It's like the light behind you was just like freaking me out. If like all of a sudden there was like a big ooh, and then it's like tapped you on the shoulder.
Yeah, you know, I mean, I can't tell you how many times I've gone out to visit Manshack Swamp, and Julia has just not come. I tell her story all the time.
Yeah, she hasn't come to see it yet.
Come say hello, you know. Come on.
She was downtown Julie Brown on MTV.
We're dating ourselves, Michael. You're careful.
There you go. I'm just saying, you know, it might have happened.
Yeah.
Oh my God. So for people that want to like just hear more of your stuff, I know you've got your website and you got your podcast. What's the best place for them to find you?
Yeah, well, Southern Gothic, the podcast, is on all your podcast apps. You can get it on Apple Podcasts, you can get it on Spotify, anywhere you listen to a podcast, you can grab that. Of course, if you want to go to the website, southerngothicmedia.com, that'll take you straight to Southern Gothic, or, you know, you can go to my website as well. Which good luck spelling it, but you know, I'm sure Michael will put a link somewhere.
We will put a link, even your website.
Absolutely. Check out the show on your podcatchers. That's the place to be.
I want to do something fun. So we do this with like everybody that's come on lately. I want to play a little game of this or that with you.
All right, let's do it.
I'll give you two choices. You can choose one or the other, but you can't choose neither or both.
Okay.
So let's just see where this or that goes with Brandon Schecksnyder. We'll start easy, get maybe a little harder, maybe some thought-provoking ones pop up later. Orbs or shadows? And there's no right or wrong or interpretation. It's however you interpret it. Okay?
Okay.
So orbs or shadows?
Shadows.
Yeah?
Yeah.
How about haunted house or haunted forest?
Ooh. Let's do a forest.
Yes. Yeah, have you got haunted forest stories?
Not enough.
Okay.
I mean, swamp stories, but not forest. Not a lot of forest ones. Yeah.
Okay. Electronic voice phenomena, EVP, or spirit photography?
Oh, well, I'm an audio engineer, so I am extra skeptical with the audio recordings because I understand how how all the algorithms work. So we're going to have to go with the photography. Yeah.
Classic ghost story or modern ghost story?
Ooh, modern definitely freaks me out more now. Yeah.
By the way, do you ever make up your own ghost stories? Or do you retell classics?
Well, I have this one that I kind of made up on my own. I won't say made up, but it was when I learned the most one day about how ghost stories get made. Because there's this, when I was growing up, we lived about, I don't know, a couple blocks away from the levee on the Mississippi River in New Orleans, right? Mm-hmm. And if you've ever been down there, the levee is during the different seasons, the river goes up and down, or, you know, kind of gets higher, comes up to the levee. And when it's not, during one season, there's like a gap of land between, it looks like a little swamp between the river and the levee. When I was growing up, my dad used to tell me that if I didn't eat my dinner, then Mr. Nolan was going to come out from behind the levee and eat my dinner. All right. Like, you know, I thought of him as some like hermit or something. Right. Uh-huh. So when I got older, I was down at my sister's house one day with my kids, and I thought I would tell them the same thing, you know, and it's like, well, this is how stories get born. Right. Like this is how, you know, like your dad tells you something. And of course, he's just trying to get me to eat my peas and carrots or whatever. Right. And I told this story a little more drawn out to a friend one day, and on a podcast, I was on somebody's podcast and told it a little, you know, and my dad listened to the show and he texted me after and said, Mr. Nolan was our life insurance salesman and you just happened to be scared of him. So like my brain had just kind of like interpreted more of what this was. There's just an old guy who came over to sell life insurance. And I was just like freaked out by this dude. It's like
a 5-year-old.
So no, I don't make up my own, but you know, I think we all kind of interpret our own, you know?
Feeling you on that. Yeah. How about the Sleepy Hollow headless horseman or the woman in white?
The woman in white is, as we talked about, for sure. Yeah.
How about Ouija boards? Harmless fun or risky business?
Oh, I ain't touching those.
No, really?
No, I have, as a joke, I've my welcome mat out there outside of my flat. It's a Ouija board welcome mat, but you will not find an actual Ouija board in my house. I don't know if it's real. I don't know if I believe it, but I'm not going to find out.
Okay. All right. Now, see, there might be the way that you find your ghost, but I have to agree with you about Ouija boards. They scare the crap out of me. Even though they used to sell those like your kids for like parties
and
stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, my kids are dying to play with one, get one. I don't know, man. I remember how bad I was scared with like The Exorcist and all. I don't think they're real. I don't think it. I'm skeptical.
Yeah.
But I'm not going to find out.
What about what's the, scariest scary movie that you've ever seen?
Man, you know, when I was younger, the Texas Chainsaw Massacre scared me more than anything. Okay. Like that was because it was but it was different because it was so realistic because they didn't show stuff. Uh-huh. It was like the way it was cut was like your brain had to like, it's similar to Jaws, right? Like you didn't really see anything for the longest amount of time. And I don't know about y'all, but what's up in here is way worse than anything you can show me.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Oh my God. Okay. What about full-bodied apparitions, ghost, or disembodied voices?
Oh man. I want to see a full-body apparition. I mean, I'm dying again. I'm y'all's PR agent. Come on, man. Let's somebody come say hi.
There are people who swear they've got pictures of apparitions and. I guess they do. I don't know what they have or if it's bad film at back in the day or CGI or whatever it is these days, but people say they're there. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I don't negate any of it at all. Mm-hmm. I think it's one of the things that I've learned doing this so long is, you know, 99% is probably hooey, but there's like another 1% that y'all, I don't know.
Okay. All right. So ghost hunting, we haven't talked specifically about that. Thrilling adventure or serious research?
Oh, man. You're going to put me on the spot with that. Oh, there's such a complicated relationship with it. Because I have friends who I feel like really do a serious, great job with it. Mm-hmm. But again, I feel like 90% of it is not. So, let's just call it, what were the options in your words? So I don't, liability wise, I don't upset any of my friends.
Thrilling adventure or serious research.
Let's just call it a thrilling adventure today.
Okay. We'll go with thrilling adventure. you like historical ghosts or fictional ghosts?
I love historical ghosts. Yeah.
Okay. And we still got to find one for you. So you can be the PR guy for all the, the out there. What about urban legends or rural hauntings?
Ooh, probably the rural hauntings. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. How about residential hauntings or intelligent hauntings? Residual hauntings. I'm sorry. Residual
hauntings. I think, I enjoy more the intelligent and telling those type of stories. Yeah.
I got to ask you about the movies again. Did you see Poltergeist? You had to see Poltergeist.
Oh, sure. Yeah. Yeah.
I just have to ask this because I never understood when they went to get Carol Ann, right? And the lady says, walk into the light, Carol Ann. And like, everyone's like, no, don't do this. And then he goes into the light and he pulls her out. I don't understand the whole Carol Ann thing at the end. Everyone was just scared. What do you think happened with Carol Ann and getting her back?
Oh my gosh. I think that's like the point is to just upset you to not know. I mean, I don't know. I haven't thought about that in ages.
Yeah. Somebody out there probably knows about Carol Ann.
Yeah.
All I know is the little horse running around the room when they were spinning around was like, okay, that's creepy, too creepy for me.
it's definitely that movie's creepy. Poltergeist in general. I mean, just the whole, that type of haunting is the creepiest of all to me.
Yeah.
That like vengeful, resentful, mean spirited, you know? Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. I'm not down with them. So let's say you've got some haunted objects. Let's
all right.
Pretend. Okay. Would you keep one or immediately get rid of it?
Well, I would obviously keep them. I know I said I wouldn't do the Ouija board. I, for instance, back on the bookshelf back there, I have a rock from the Bellwitch Cave. Uh-huh. You know, and so that's kind of attached to a story with the Bellwitch. She's actually a poltergeist. That's a great American Ghost story. Was considered the only ghost to actually kill a human. The only person from the afterlife back in the early 19th century, just this spirit of a witch who haunted. Anyway, it's in Tennessee up there, and there's a cave that she supposedly haunts, the cave, and it's a tourist spot, and you can go visit it. And I went out to the spot, and I had just started dating my girlfriend, and she's a weirdo like me as well, of course. And how could she not? She's the one that wants to go to the Bellwitch Cave at this point. Yes. So we decide to go, and we go to the cave. And of course, the whole discussion is the fact that, you know, supposedly if you take a rock out of this cave, it's bad luck. And there's all these stories about people who leave the cave with a rock. They get a mile down the road and there's a car accident or something like that. Right. And when you go in the kind of to buy your tickets, there's all these letters on the wall from all these people sending the rock back. Please take the rock. This awful thing happened. Well, I'm down in the cave. And of course I'm with a pretty blonde girl who I'm just started dating. And, you know, I'm going to show off and steal a rock. You know, she did as well. She of course had to get a bigger one than me. And I still have the rock, and, you know, I mean, this is now much later, and, she is still in my life. So we kind of joke, maybe we got the opposite effect of it wasn't, you know, actually, to make a long story short, I collect some weird things ever since we did that. Definitely got some objects from some haunted places that I should not, some things like that. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
A couple of them are in the frame back there.
How about ancestor spirits? They're comforting or unsettling?
Ooh, it depends which grandma we're talking about, right? Which family of origin issue is coming back to haunt you? I think it's comforting. Yeah.
Yeah. You think I don't know. Would you want to be a ghost? Like you pass away, bam, I want to be a ghost. And if so, what are you going to do?
Oh gosh, man. That's difficult, because am I going to haunt somebody I don't like, or once I pass, I'm going to finally let go of all those resentments and be happy. Right. And be,
I don't know.
You know, I'd like to think that I would, I want to be like an omen ghost, right? Like I want to be one of the, you know, like if you see Brandon down on the streets of Franklin, it means an awful storm's coming. Yeah. I think maybe that's like a good legacy to have as a ghost, you know?
Oh my God. All right. I got one more for you. Would you rather see ghost or hear a ghost?
I want to see one. Yeah. That's an easy one. I'm still dying for that apparition, Michael.
We are so going to have to find a way to get you a ghost without having the Ouija board involved.
Yeah, exactly. It's not for lack of trying. I mean, it's not for lack, clearly, you know, with spending my life doing this. Yeah.
Yeah. You know what? It was so weird. We got the Ouija board for a gift for, I don't know what holiday it was. It might've been Christmas or birthday or whatever. Uh-huh. And for some reason we never opened it. So whoever gave it, like you just, whatever it cost at the time, that was like $10 or $15. Yeah. Let me just get this back to you.
It's like the Christmas fruit cake now, right?
Yes.
That's what, yeah.
Yeah. Just keep giving them along. Brandon, awesome time, man.
Such a pleasure.
For all you guys that can't see the screen because you're listening on podcast, I'm going to spell out Brandon, Brandon, and Scheck Snyder is Schexnayder, Schecksnyder.com, BrandonSchecksnyder.com. This has been super fun. I want to hear some more stories. We got to find anyone out there that knows where Brandon can find a ghost and take a picture. Definitely let us know, because I want him to get his picture.
Thank you, Michael.
Thank you, man, for being on. I really appreciate you.
Yeah, thanks.
All right. Bye, everybody. And by the way, I forgot one thing that just happened with us over at A Funny Way of Looking is we now have this cool new newsletter, and I want you guys to check it out. If you want to know who's coming up, who's been here, get more cool stuff from them and check out their websites, go to afunnywayoflooking.news and sign up, and we'll see you over there sometime. Goodbye, everybody.
Shabbat.